going to speak to you about a new project that we're developing in New York City. And because I come from New York City, I'm a professor of urban public health, and I'm the acting executive director of the Brookdale Center on Healthy Aging and Longevity, all at Hunter College, City University of New York. And because I'd like to approach a field with a conceptual framework, we are developing an interest in urban aging as a field, following the model and leadership of our distinguished professor Nick Freudenberg at Hunter and others, Sandro Galeo at University of Michigan and David Blahoff at New York Academy of Medicine. The particular sector that I'm going to be talking about today is found in social and community influences. And the conceptual framework is a little bit more specified in this slide, where we're looking at pathways towards healthy aging outcomes. And include community-based organizations such as senior centers, which have not usually been part of the public health network or framework. I think there's a growing potential there. New models are beginning to be developed in some parts of the country, and we are taking this on in New York City. Now, I think it's very important, when we think about healthy aging in our communities, to not just think about it in terms of services for frail elderly, but to think about it in the global sense of true healthy aging, wellness and productivity. And so think about not only health outcomes, but economic outcomes. And the new parts of the model that we're beginning to develop include bridging from the aging services network into the public health community through access and use of services to improve well-being, functionality, and productivity in our neighborhoods. To do this, I think it's also important to begin, when we talk about healthy aging, to confront some economic myths of aging. I have to do this because my background is health economics. I'm not going to go into these in great detail, but there's an enormous amount of literature on each one of these that combats these myths. Preventive medicine, numbers and numerous articles, New England Journal and the like, showing that preventive medicine is cost effective for people over 65. Believe it or not, this is not very old literature. It's really only since the early 90s that we have begun to show that screening prevention is cost effective for older people. The elderly are a drain on the healthcare system. Well, as Uwe Reinhardt has always said, one of my heroes, the income expenses on one side of the equation is income on the other. And the healthcare system is a vibrant center of productive activity and employment, particularly in cities like New York, Boston, Washington. And in fact, as conservative a center as the Federal Reserve Board has done a study that over the last major recession in New York City, what pulled us out of that recession? It was the healthcare industry. So healthcare is a serious boon to the economy. And who's fueling the healthcare system? It's the elderly. So we need to think about that in a slightly different way. Elderly are a drain on the economy. Well, there's absolutely nothing in economic theory that suggests that's the case. In fact, Japan gets it. And they are very much pursuing and promoting the silver industries, as they call them. We're going to see a technology boom, I predict, in terms of this demographic boom that we see in front of us. In the aging conferences that I go to, it's amazing the people there that are so excited about the new technologies, like cell phones are going to be able to take your blood pressure and send it up to your doctor, and home assistance robotics. I mean, there's a huge amount of demand push from elderly as well. And increased longevity will cause increased social costs. This is what I'm going to do spend a minute about. The recent economic research has shown just the opposite. that in fact life expectancy increases productivity and GNP. Now, this is done by Harvard professor David Bloom. Granted, this is done in the developing world, but my point is, why can't this be done in the neighborhoods of New York City and our own neighborhoods? There's no reason that this is only applicable to the developing world. Health increases productivity and income, and in fact, some studies done in the University of Chicago show that the social value of increased longevity is huge. However, in New York City, you can see by this slide, the life expectancy varies by neighborhood and by income level. So how can we address this? You can see again, this is actually a new report. It's available online, just out in September, by the New York City Comptroller, showing the disparities in diabetes just huge disparities by income level. Striking disparities also in number of hospitalizations per 100,000, and where is diabetes most prevalent, of course, among older adults. And a little analysis we did showed that the hospital charges for diabetes in New York City range over $2 billion a year. Now, we can see by neighborhood huge differences, Bed-Stuy being very high, and the actual highest, which is Coney Island. And in this map being done, we're doing some GIS analyses at our center. We're combining prevalence data out of the Community Health Epidemiologic Survey in New York City with hospital cost data. And you can, when you combine these two, you can estimate real hotspots of health disparities in New York City. And it's hard to do just using the Community Health Survey because of sample sizes when you look at older adults are very, very small. And the actual neighborhood you can drill down to are very, very large. In fact, they only break it up into about 38 different neighborhoods in New York City. So the lower east side is considered one neighborhood when New Yorkers know that it's a very different group of sector, includes Wall Street and some very rich neighborhoods and some very poor neighborhoods. So if you combine the prevalence data, as we've done with hospital cost data, you can see actual hotspots where within these large neighborhoods, where the hospitalizations the highest, this is where they circled the stars. So this is where, if we were going to start new models of health prevention and promotion, those would be the neighborhoods we'd start to help reduce, really target disparities. And senior centers are really an underutilized resource. This microphone sounds kind of weird. It looks like it's really taped together, so I hope it's not too distracting. but when I met with our commissioner of aging a couple years ago, when I first came on board at the center, he said, well, what can we do together? And he said, well, we have some issues. Senior centers are losing enrollment. I said, well, what's the health status of seniors? And he said, I don't know. And I come from health policy, for a public health person, for an agency, not organizations, community-based, treating people that are vulnerable in health conditions, to have no idea what their health status is was shocking to me. So I said, well, let's do a little pilot study and sort this out, see if there are targets of opportunity here. So in the traditional definition of senior centers, what's missing is health, and this is what is the new movement now gaining prominence across the country. There's no formal census, I found out, but a large number of these centers exist, and the research to date is pretty limited for policy and practice of actually delivering care in senior centers. There are a number of evidence-based health promotion programs that have been tested out of Stanford and Maine and many other places, but actually linking these kinds of health promotion programs with increased access and use of appropriate health services. Those models are very limited to date. quote I've always liked is, to have evidence-based practice, you need practice-based evidence. And this is what we're trying to do in New York. We have deep pockets, rich diversity in New York, and enough of diversity. We have over 1 million older adults to actually be able to understand some of the differences that are going on between ethnicities, races, and cultures. So what we're starting, and we're starting it really just now, is a New York City-wide Senior Center Health Indicator Demonstration Project. We're partnering with United Hospital Fund, who is actually doing something very similar in NORCs, Naturally Occurring Retirement Communities. And we're going to be doing a representative sample of health indicators assessment in senior centers. And in the second year, we're going to be implementing some of these evidence-based interventions. And in the third year, we're going to be doing follow-up assessment. Now, we've designed a structured survey instrument. We're using standardized questionnaires for validated surveys, and we've actually recently incorporated some new questions from the WHO Global Age Friendly Cities Initiative on civic engagement. In our pilot study, it really was just a pilot. We looked at two senior centers from each borough, and they were politically chosen. And also, they were carefully chosen to be representative. So we actually were translated our questionnaire into five languages. And very briefly, let me go through a few of the results of our survey. What was interesting to me is we did not see significant differences in physical health status among seniors compared to U.S. seniors. In general. In fact, for the older seniors, our health status was higher. But what this provides is the assumption that people that go to senior centers are kind of decrepit, it's kind of this myth of frailty and lack of engagement. And it's actually the opposite. And we're finding that in New York, too. So also what encourages me to think about is that this is a representative sample of community-based elderly. And it's a very efficient way of getting data. We don't have to go door-to-door and house-to-house, extremely expensive ways of tracking health status. Mental health, however, was significantly lower. And in particular, the disparities there are striking. And these have been shown in many other settings as well as these characteristics are being studied. But Asians and Latinos have the lowest mental health scores, and those are statistically significantly different from U.S. population norms. The PHQ-2, which is a depression screening instrument, confirms that. In particular for Latinos, almost 25% of older Latinos are depressed. So this is something that is just coming to the forefront, and it's very, very important to address, because we know depression is associated with so many things, including diabetes. These are the most prevalent health conditions by race, ethnicity, and again, Latinos, almost 75% have hypertension. There are huge numbers in here. And where are pockets of opportunity in these community-based organizations? Well, one is flu shots. And again, it's all about disparities. Some groups are getting flu shots at the targeted rate. Here, it's not Asians and Latinos, it's Blacks. And for some reason, there's a very low rate of flu shots among Black attendees of senior centers. That should be addressed. Now, on the other hand, Asians have much lower rates of mammographies, while Blacks are pretty high and Latinos are very high. So it's very important, as these data show, to be sensitive to neighborhoods and cultural specificity to be most effective and efficient in targeting culturally sensitive services. Sigmoidoscopy, as you might expect, is low all across the board. And a huge target opportunity there, since colon cancer is preventable. We need to increase those rates. And Brookdale is doing action research. We're very interested in having this research be applied in the field, and we're building a toolkit that we would help senior centers to develop evidence-based programs based on the profile of their particular populations. And last, but not least, our leader of Centers for Disease Control is showing us that is telling us and helping leadership along with Josephine Carbonella and every single leader, Center for CMS and HHS, that we need to think about creatively as public health professionals new models in to engage the senior services network, the aging network, to join as partnerships as we address these huge challenges facing us in promoting healthy urban aging in the U.S. Thank you very much.